Okay. Tonight, our learning is sponsored by Rifki and Uri Lerner and family in memory of Rifki's mother, Sarah Reza Bas Ephraim Mordechai Zichrona Levracha, and Sylvia Wang in memory of her husband, Yecheskel Tzvi Ben Shmuel Yitzchak Zichrono Levracha. I want to spend one final week on Perek Dalad of the Mesiyas Yisharim, on Bederech Knias HaZahiros, and then on Thursday, Be'ezus Hashem, we launch into Perek Hay, the fifth chapter of the Mesiyas Yisharim. And the final week on Perek Dalad, I want to make some observations that are admittedly a little more machshavati, if you will. They're a little more philosophical in nature rather than the musar slash ethical focus that we've had until now. But I think they do reflect on certain important themes in the thought of the Ramchal in general and are therefore worthwhile considering. And I do think they have musar ethical ramifications too, but I think they start from a more philosophical place. The question that the Ramchal poses towards the end of Perek Dalad is, what is the role of rachamim in the divine plan? What is the role of mercy in the divine plan? If you remember, he spent a while talking about how we are held accountable for even the smallest infraction that we commit. He spoke extensively about how we are judged on everything. We are judged on large matters and small matters. He gave plenty of examples from figures in the Tanakh and figures in Jewish history who were punished for seemingly minor infractions. And he really just focused heavily on how we need to be exceedingly careful about everything we do because of that inevitable judgment. I was arguing that part of that, and perhaps the central part of that, is the recognition that everything that we do matters. That I think I was arguing that it's not just a matter of it's not just fear tactics. It's not just the fact that you're going to be punished if you do something wrong. It's instilling the cognizance that everything we do, every choice we make, is important. And in the natural human tendency to dismiss trivial decisions as trivial, to say, oh, why does God really care? Why is it so important? The Ramchal was emphasizing that it is so important. Even the small things that we do count and matter. But after emphasizing so extensively that we're punished even on small things, then he ends up wondering, he throws up his hands and says, if that's the case, what is the role of rachamim? What's the role of mercy in all of this? If we describe Hashem as a kel rachum mechanun, after all, we describe Hashem as a merciful and compassionate God, and I just got finished telling you that people are punished for the smallest infractions, how does it all square up? So he says, and this is on page Chavtes in the Feldheim version, he says, Amna midas ha-racham hiya nosenes hefech ha-shlosh ha-dvarim she-zacharnu, haynu she-yutan zman lachote v'lo yikachin min ha-arez miyad ke-shechata, she-onash atzmo lo yiyya ad l'chala, v'she-ha-tshuva tinosin lachote b'chesed gamor, he says, Midas HaRachamim serves three functions, he says. What are the three functions? He says, time is extended to the sinner and they are not punished immediately. The punishment itself is not a full and total punishment. It doesn't destroy you, but it gives you opportunity to continue. And you're given the possibility of doing teshuva. And to me, it's that third that is the most key among these this three-tiered hierarchy. I think largely the first two kind of lead to the third. The fact that you're not punished immediately means that you have time to make amends. You have time to correct course. You have time to apologize and to undo the mistakes and sins of your past. The fact that the punishment is not total, that you're not cut off, that God doesn't eliminate you or end your life the moment you sin, is another way of saying that you're given another day in order to correct, in order to make better choices, in order to do teshuva. And the fact that teshuva is perceived as a true gift, a chesed gamor, that it's an act of chesed on part of Hashem, and it's given to us as an opportunity, is an idea that we find in much of Machashava. And again, I think hits on certain important themes in the thought of the Ramchal. So let me just highlight two things that are, again, from a philosophical perspective, that are significant about this line, and then perhaps focus on one pragmatic takeaway from it. Number one, the notion that tshuva is a gift is something of a machlokas among Jewish thinkers. Is tshuva a gift, or is tshuva a kind of natural course in the spiritual fabric of the world and the universe? The Ramchal here, and the Rabbeinu Yonah and Sha'arei Teshuvah describe Teshuvah as a gift. But by the natural course of things, the natural ethical assumption or spiritual assumption of the universe is justice. You do something wrong, you should be punished, period. If you're given a chance to make amends, that it is because Hashem is giving you some kind of divine gift, the second chance that you don't really deserve, that shouldn't really exist by the natural order of things, but it's almost a kind of divine intervention giving you this opportunity to indeed correct course and to indeed undo the mistakes of your past. My contrast, Rav Kook felt that tshuva was almost a natural process. Rav Kook felt that sin is a deviation from the earth's natural course. The entire universe, Klal Yisrael as a whole collectively, and every individual, Rav Kook felt, is on a natural course of perpetual improvement, of getting better, of coming closer to Hashem. Rav Kook was the ultimate theological optimist. He had an extraordinarily optimistic worldview, which is how he was able to see the positive in things that other and most traditional Jewish thinkers saw as totally antithetical to Torah. He was able to see a Zionist movement that was rabidly anti-religious and see the positive in it. He thought it was part of the Geula process because Rav Kook was this ultimate optimist. For Rav Kook, tshuva was natural. You were getting yourself back in line with the natural order of things of improvement. Tshuva is the process of improvement. The world is on a natural course of improvement. Sin is an unnatural deviation from that course. And tshuva is kind of putting yourself back on that natural trajectory of improvement for yourself and the world around you. So you have these two different perspectives on tshuva, each of which I think contains a certain power in its own right. Rav Kook's perspective is very powerful in terms of its optimism, in terms of its assumption that we are naturally good, and we do have the capability of returning to that natural trajectory of improvement if we're willing to dislodge ourselves from the sins that kind of hold us back from it and shoot us off course from that natural trajectory. And there's something very powerful about that, again, that optimistic view of humanity, that we are naturally good and we're naturally improving. But I think there's something very powerful about the Rabbeinu Yonah Ramchal view as well, that tshuva is a gift. It's not something that we're entitled to or that we can take for granted. The notion that we have a second chance and really to just undo any mistakes of our past, not just to say sorry for them and be forgiven, but from a theological standpoint, to really undo them. The famous Gemara that says that they could be nasin kizichuyos, they could be considered a merit for you when you do full teshuva. It's a gift. And it's a gift to appreciate. Teshuva shouldn't be perceived just as an obligation that we have to do during the month of Elul or year-round. It's also an opportunity and a gift that we're given the privilege of tapping into. And I think there's something powerful about that theological perspective as well. So that's number one, two perspectives on teshuva. Number two. To me, this also relates to the Ramchal's broader perspective on human choice and human free will. In Hashkafa, the concept of teshuva and the concept of free will are heavily linked. The Rambam, when he discusses free will in his Mishnah Torah, when he discusses Bechira Chofshes, the concept of free will, he does so in the fifth parak of Hilchos Teshuva. Because for the Rambam, free will is mostly manifested in moral choices and the moral choices that we make. It's true that free will manifests in terms of what cereal you have for breakfast also, but that's ultimately a triviality. That's not an important part of free will. The important part of free will is what moral choices we make and how we choose to live our lives. So those two notions are heavily interrelated. For the Ramchal, free will, like we were suggesting by teshuva, is in part a chesed, it's a gift from Hashem. This is most acutely expressed not in Mesilas Yesharim, but in the Ramchal's perhaps other major Hashkafic work, the Derech Hashem. And the Ramchal actually argues that's part of the purpose of creation itself. One of the great mysteries is why does a God who lacks and needs nothing, why does he engage in the process of creation in the first place? And of course, there's no definitive answer to that. There are different conjectures. One of the most famous comes from the Ramchal in Derech Hashem, where he argues that God creates in order to bestow goodness upon others. And why does God have a need to bestow goodness upon others? So that's a whole separate part of the argument. He argues that itself is part of God's goodness. But how does he bestow goodness upon others? So in theory, you could have just created a universe in which everybody just sits back and sits on the beach and relaxes, and it rains gumdrops and there are rainbows and unicorns. That sounds pretty nice also. So why in the world do we have this universe where there's so much struggle and strife and difficulty and suffering and evil? So the Ramchal argues that the greatest goodness that man could have is not just sitting back in this perfectly good world with gumdrops and rainbows, but the ability to have freedom and autonomy as expressed through free choice and free will. If God would just create us as automatons, as robotic doers of good, simply because that's how we were pre-programmed, yeah, the world would look a lot better than it is now. Everybody would be doing the right thing, and everybody would be holding the door for each other, and saying please and thank you, and everybody would be actually giving up their seats for pregnant women on the subway, which Rena will tell you people don't do anymore. everything would be nice and wonderful, but not because of any meaningful choices we'd be making. It would just be, we would just be puppets on a string. And the Ramchal argues that a greater goodness is to actually have human autonomy and choice, and to be able to engage in the meaningful processes of choosing what's right and what's good, and engaging in the difficult process of growth and self-improvement and pursuing a moral and ethical and spiritual path. For the Ramchal, that is, in essence, worth more than the automatic goodness that would exist in a world of unfree creatures just pre-programmed to do good. Of course, if we are going to be autonomous and free, then there's always the choice, by definition, of choosing what's wrong and choosing evil. And because of those choices that many of us unfortunately make, there is a world that's deeply imperfect. And part of our moral and spiritual charge is to work towards better perfection and to work towards towards undoing those evils and promoting good. But the fact that the Ramchal calls tshuva a divine chesed here, that it's a gift from Hashem, in my mind is also consistent with that notion that the ability to make meaningful choices, meaningful moral choices themselves, is indeed a gift, is indeed something that Hashem gives us as a means towards bestowing his goodness upon others, and perhaps, according to the Ramchal, is fundamental to the creation of the universe itself as to why the Creator decided to create. So again, like I said, those are more philosophical and theological reflections on the end of Perek Daled, but I'll close with just one point that I think emerges directly from it. And it's largely consistent with what we were talking about last week. When one perceives meaningful choice as a gift, it does reframe a lot of the choices that we make. I think one of the major scourges of modern society is an abundance, and I'm certainly not the first to say this, you can speak to any mental health professional, is just an abundance of stress. In the busy lives that we lead, in the busy world that we live in, there's an abundance of stress, which often comes from the pressure of having to make choices and having to engage in a world that requires a lot of us, that asks a lot of us, that asks us to do a lot. Sometimes, you know, you think about, I think it's largely a pipe dream, but you could think about some kind of idyllic existence like the one I was describing before, in which things are just more relaxed, in which people breathe a little more and don't have the same stress and pressure of making decisions and engaging in activities all the time, and deadlines and again speeches at installation events and other things that create stress in people's lives. You know, we think of this kind of idyllic existence where stress is non-existent, and to a certain degree there's value to that. We've spoken many times in this Chabura about the value of slowing things down and sometimes taking a breath and releasing ourselves from the busyness of our lives. But I think another side to that is also remembering that with that stress often comes meaning. A lot of times, stress comes together with a life of active engagement, when we are actively engaged with things. When we are doing meaningful things, very often that does come with a certain degree of pressure. If life was just sitting back and relaxing, then you wouldn't have any of those pressures that are involved with, again, the mental health scourge, I said, of stress. And again, I'm not here to defend stress, again, as I said before. But I think sometimes it's helpful, at least for me, to just reframe the picture and realize that a lot of times the stress that we have in our lives comes from leading a life of meaning and making meaningful choices. You know, when I have stress in my life because I have 3 kids, all of whom have Coxsackie, again, totally theoretical example, all of whom have Coxsackie, and they're screaming in the middle of the night, and you're trying to deal with one, and you're trying to deal with the other, and again, like, and you realize, again, a mental health professional will tell you, and they say this all the time, that having children doesn't increase happiness, it increases stress. Maybe that's true, but I would argue it also increases meaning. And yeah, you can choose to have a carefree life where you just kick back and don't engage in those difficult processes of human growth and human investment and contributing to larger causes. But the ability to do so, even if it does create challenges in our life, it's also a gift. And that's what the Ramchal is telling us too. Sometimes the greatest gift is not just kicking back and relaxing. Sometimes the greatest gift is engaging in the admittedly difficult processes of contributing to the world around us and pursuing spiritual growth for ourselves in our own lives, despite the challenges that exist within that process. So I think if there's a Musar Hashkafic takeaway to take from the philosophical reflections, it's appreciating the gift of having to make difficult choices and having to engage in the internal struggles of growth and trying to make the right choices, because even as that is challenging, even as it's hard, it's important to sometimes take a step back and recognize that, at least for the Ramchal, it's a divine chesed and it's a gift too. And it's a gift to be appreciated.